The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And it is time, once again, to return, or not once again, I guess this is the first time we're returning to the June 2023 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is the seafood issue and coastal legends. Well, we didn't even get through the pictorial last month. There were so many pictures of lighthouses and other things along historic Route 12 out there in the Outer Banks. Today, I can't resist the temptation of reading what is probably going to be a fairly long article. I don't know how long it's going to take to read this because it just goes on and on. And what it is, it's actually a fold-out page, four of them, it's called The Life and Times of Our State magazine, and it starts with the 30s, and it ends in 2020s and beyond. And as I say, it's unusual to have a pullout here. If I turn it over, by the way, it's interesting. The backside, they had to do something with it, but it wasn't part of the main article. So they put in a great big picture of the Outer Banks. It says, "Explore our legendary shores. Corolla, Outer Banks, North Carolina, CorollaNC.com, the Outer Banks of North Carolina, OuterBanks.org, and then there's some additional information about places along the Outer Banks. And there's a little inset of a photograph here taken, the first part of the 1900s or something in there, because you can tell from the the bathing suits that the two people have on, the man has a top, an athletic shirt type top on. It looks like, you can't tell the color because it's a black and white or sepia toned photo, and it's on a dory or a dory of some kind, rowboat, you might call it, pulled up on the beach. No color on it, lots of dirt on the postcard or picture or whatever it came from, but it's an inset on here. Well, all that chatter out of the way, let's get started with the life and times of Our State magazine. The 30s, the beginning. There is a picture here. It says, it's probably the first issue. It says, The State, a weekly survey of North Carolina. I can't read the date or the price because it's kind of small. It says, Carl Gorsch, editor. And there's an arrow that points down from it. It says, newly elected Governor J.C.B. Eringhaus pens an art editorial called North Carolina is Coming Back. It sets a tone of optimism during tumultuous economic times. As governor of our great state, it is my opinion that so far as North Carolina is concerned, we have already crossed the dangerous seas of business depression and are once more sailing in smooth waters and in a safe bay. So the 30s, the beginning, volume 1, number 1. June 3rd, 1933. The first issue launches, giving readers 24 pages that foretell our spirit of editorial celebration. Positive stories delve into the state's robust strawberry market. The market of Chadbourne has shipped a total of 180,000 crates and the expected summer crowds at Atlantic Beach. The casino contains an excellent dance floor, which will enable dancers to enjoy themselves at all hours of the day and night. Full-page advertisers include Duke Power Company, Wachovia Bank and Trust, and Carolina Telephone and Telegraph. All things of the past and acquisition and name changes and all that sort of stuff. The first subscription ad, if you wanted to put something in. It was a dollar for 4 months, $2 for 8 months, or $3 for 1 year. I don't know why it says ad after that, if that's how much they run it, or that was what the subscription price was. And it talks about Carl Gorsh here, born in Tarrytown, New York. Our founder lands in North Carolina in 1913 and never leaves. After working as a newspaper reporter and publisher in eastern North Carolina, Carl Gorsh started The State in Raleigh in 1933, intending it to be the first statewide publication dedicated to the appreciation of his adopted and beloved home. In the first issue, he writes, "I do not believe that there is any other state in the Union of which the people are in as close and intimate touch with one another as they are here. The people in the coastal plain are interested in what the folks in the mountains are doing, and vice versa." 1937, The Lost Colony premieres. On the occasion of the 350th anniversary of the landing of the first English colonists, we write, "It is not often that a place the size and scope of Roanoke Island is called upon to entertain a president of the United States, and to have in its midst a playwright and an author, the eminence of Paul Green of Chapel Hill, who is now putting all of his time and effort on a new pageant drama, The Lost Colony, which will be presented for the first time on the sandy shore near Fort Raleigh, where the first English settlers landed in the wilderness of a new world 3 centuries ago." 1939 at the World's Fair. A note from Governor Clyde Hoey appears in the special edition announcing that copies of the magazine will be distributed at the North Carolina building during the New York World's Fair. Many of these copies will undoubtedly fall into the hands of people who have comparatively little knowledge of our great state. They will not be disappointed in the cordial hospitality which they will find waiting them. 1940s, the war years. In the Army now, in a 4-page feature, Carl Gorsh relays his awe over visiting Fayetteville and Fort Bragg. You can't even begin to imagine what a bustling place it is. What 2 months ago was a densely wooded tract of land is now a tented city, honeycombed with roads, electrical light lines, water mains, telephone facilities, mess halls, and other utilities essential to an Army division. Watching Washington, 1941. The United States enters World War II with a column called Watching Washington, News from the National Capital of Interest to Carolinians, becomes a prominent weekly feature. In our December 20th, 1941 issue, a writer reflects on how overnight the war wrought an electrifying change. When Hitler marched into the Rhineland and got away with it, this writer began to fear the worst. The worst has come to pass. And there's a picture of a soldier on the front of that magazine. And on the 1940 issue, In the Army Now, there was a picture of the flag. It did not have 50 states on it at that time. I'm thinking it was 48. Two young people. The young boy has a little broad lapel on his shirt, which have stars on them, a boy and a girl there. The magazine never had an official military correspondent, but Gertrude Carraway comes close. The New Bern native files weekly stories about life at Army training camps, Tar Heel war leaders, and the USO at Christmas time. Now here we see a bottle of milk. It says Pine State Milk. I can't read the rest of it, partly because of the size of it and partly because of my eyes. The war is over, 1945. Merely a Woman's Opinion is a column written by the publisher's wives, each adopting the pseudonym Carol Dare. At war's end, the column congratulates war organizations, merchants, and food dealers for the really grand job they have done for us during the emergency. I think the dairymen of North Carolina need an extra pat on the back for keeping milk on our doorsteps without rationing or cessation for the duration. It was a signal triumph. And now, the 1950s, travel takes off. West to east. Picture of Bill Sharp here. 1951, Bill Sharp joins Carl Gorsch as co-publisher, bringing with him his Mantiota Murphy column, in which he documents his travels across North Carolina. The name changes to Murphy to Mantio. Gorsch explains that the change is not made to improve euphony, but when you read from left to right, as most people do, you read from west to east. North Carolina Nationwide. In 1954, the state reaches subscribers in every state. We tell readers that every so often, we have to write up a report for the post office showing destinations of the magazines we mail. Last year, all the state's blanks were filled in. There are 33 overseas subscribers also. Ready to roll. 1955, the vacation issue introduces readers to North Carolina travel opportunities as, in the past 5 years, new roads have opened entirely new possibilities for the vacationist, single couples or families. There are brand new resorts, modern hotels and hotels, a large improvement in food and service, more mountaintops, waterfalls, fishing streams, lakes, beaches, piers, and historic points have been made available. And then coastal comeback. Folks are eager to spend time on the coast, even after Hurricane Hazel. We advise readers to make arrangements for cottages as early as possible. In fact, reservations, rentals, and bids on beach property were brisker than at any time businessmen remembered. People who never come to the beach were showing up in droves. As one observer notes, people still like to dangle their feet in the Atlantic Ocean. And here's a picture of a cover from State Magazine back then. It says, Your Vacation in North Carolina. There are two fishermen talking at the edge of the ocean as some water comes in by their feet. They're both holding ocean fishing poles. And then there is a picture of a road turning onto a parking lot where there is an endless stream of cars parked, presumably to go to the beach. 1959, Tryon Palace renewed. A sneak peek at Tryon Palace's reopening appears in the Trip of the Week column. At historic New Bern, the most beautiful building in colonial America has risen like a phoenix from its charred foundations and will be open to the public on April 10th. Got to move the magazine to the right to get to the third page here. 1960s, the building boom. Building, by the way, the picture of Tryon Palace is taken from above. Don't know how they did it in those days, but it's a nice look down. And you see the palace, which is three stories high in the background. And then it has an oval-shaped fence going around it. And you come in the front, and it turns into a large circular driveway. And then there's a building on the left and the building on the right. And I thought of that because of this kind of an unusual picture. I don't know how to describe it yet. I got to read about what it is first. 1960, Building Higher, a recurring section, Construction in North Carolina, and column, Strictly Constructive, reports on the state's newest buildings, businesses, and infrastructure. A 1960 issue highlights High Point's sleek new furniture plaza, ongoing construction in Durham's Research Triangle Park, and the completion of the highest construction project in Eastern America, a new observation tower on the crest of Mount Mitchell. And that's what it is. What looks unusual about this is the tower wall looks yellow. And I don't think I've been up there, so I don't know whether that's factually true, or it might have been true back in the 1960s. But the wall of the road leading up to it and the round tower itself are all yellow in this picture. And the clouds are a little bit below the height of where the mountain top and the tower are. 1963, Upward Slope. Our February 2, 1963 issue heralds the arrival of skiing with resorts at Blowing Rock and Cataloochee Ranch. As a new industry, North Carolina's first experiments in the winter sports resort business are getting along all right. They'd get along a lot better with more appropriate weather. And geometry and geography. What exactly is the triangle? In 1963, editors of the state aren't totally sure, so they ask an expert to report in Triangle Explained. A sidebar to the story reads, not long ago, one of our subscribers asked these questions. Who owns the Research Triangle? Who runs it? What does it do? We found ourselves about as foggy as the subscriber. There's no pictures associated with those. Nor is there for this one, except a artificial bolt of lightning in an icon. 1966, high voltage. Bill Sharp reports on Duke Power's facilities on the shores of the newly created Lake Norman. A billion-dollar gamble on North Carolina's future not only has paid off, the power industry is already betting another billion that industrial growth in this state will continue to be accelerated in the decade ahead. 1969, crossing into a new decade. After more than 3 years of construction, the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge opens to traffic in October 1969. 1 month later, photographer Hugh Morton's photo of the new gateway to Wilmington makes our cover, as shown here. The modern bridge serves as an icon on the fast-growing city, a connection to the rest of the state, and a promise of big things to come. It's a pretty old-fashioned-looking bridge, the way that it's constructed here. Very heavy, upside-down U-shaped base, and then the roadway above, and some sort of an odd tower stuck on top of that. How about the 1970s, the era of conservation? A call for cleanliness, 1970, merely a woman's opinion column suggests an idea for improvement in the new decade. All over North Carolina, there's a revival of interest in arts and crafts of all kinds. New concepts of landscaping are seen everywhere. But who wants to drive through trash up to the hubcaps to get to see these beauties? My hope for this decade of the 70s in North Carolina is cleanliness, which is said to be next to godliness. And there's a pen and pencil or pen and ink. An ink and paper, whatever you call it, drawing here of a woman. She's got a strap over her head, and she's holding her hand up against her mouth with little marks indicating, oh my goodness. 1973, officially released weekly, The State. Now it changes from a biweekly to a monthly publication. In 1974, parks emerge. Moyock resident A.B. Coleman donates 1,065 acres of Gates County land to create Merchants Mill Pond State Park. The state reports on the event, calling the new park a fairyland of beauty you'll soon be able to visit. Coleman believes that we must save the land for future generations to see, study, and enjoy. A state park would preserve the area in its natural state, protecting it from overdevelopment and commercialization. 1975, I see giraffes here. The new zoo. The first phase of construction of the 1,371-acre North Carolina Zoo in Randolph County is complete. The land where the facility sits, initially known as Purgatory Mountain, welcomes animal additions often. The state introduces North Carolinians to a few new residents, including an 8-month-old giraffe and a 250-pound African gorilla and a female rhinoceros from Kenya. In 1979, preserving Weymouth, one of our most celebrated cultural centers of the Weymouth Estate, is nearly lost when it's willed to a local community college in 1974, just when it seemed that James Boyd's home place was to go under the bulldozers, a group of interested Sandhill citizens was galvanized into action. The Friends of Weymouth, Inc., forms and purchases the home and grounds to restore the property to its original glory. The nonprofit maintains Weymouth's park trails and facilities and continues to promote construction. And now I'm pulling it over to the last two pages so I can read it a little more closely. The 1980s, landmarks and legends. 1980, where Q is king. In North Carolina, barbecue isn't just a method of cooking. In March, we write that our state is the only state in the nation where barbecue is a noun, meaning pork, pit-cooked over coals, and delicately seasoned with that unique sauce. And some of the best comes from Goldsboro. Our knife and fork column proclaims that Wilbur's Barbecue is crowned at mealtimes and sometimes in between. And the, is crowded at mealtimes and sometimes in between. And the quiet is not nearly as golden as the hush puppies. 1981, here's a picture of that famous lighthouse out at Hatteras. Save the Lighthouse, the image of Cape Hatteras Light on the cover of a 1981 issue shows how swirling seas on the south side, immediately in front of the historic structure, have cut it to within 100 feet of the lighthouse's foundation. A campaign to raise $1 million to move the lighthouse begins in late 1980. The project concludes in 1999 at a total cost of $11.8 million. 1987, the parkway is complete. Photographer Hugh Morton shoots the image of the iconic Lynn Cove Viaduct that appears on the cover of the state to celebrate the completion of the final section of the Blue Ridge Parkway. The Lynn Cove Viaduct curves for 1,243 feet, hugging the sides of Grandfather Mountain, scarcely scratching its ancient rocks and forests, an engineering marvel shaped by computers and lasers. It is the crowning jewel of the Blue Ridge Parkway's final link. And to the left of that, there is a picture, and it says Painting NC. In a cabin-turned studio in Lexington, the prolific artist Bob Timberlake, pictured here, captures the natural beauty of the state on canvas. Two of his paintings become covers of the state in the 80s. We reflect on how his realistic paintings are composed of intricate details and warm textures that seem to strike common chords in viewers. Though drawn from a distinctly rural North Carolina, the painting's appeal extends far beyond the state's boundaries. 1990s, our state takes shape. The picture of Interstate 40 sign. Wilmington meets Barstow. A decade of exciting changes for North Carolina, and this magazine opens with a reaffirmation of our reputation as the good roads state. Wilmington, freshly minted as the eastern terminus of Interstate 40, sends a delegation to its western counterpart in Barstow, California, carrying a letter from Governor James G. Martin, a license plate, and other Tar Heel memorabilia. Reporting on the visit, we write, "Who says friendships can't be forged over 2,000 miles? Meanwhile, our February 1990 issue recognizes a milestone on the western end of the state. The Blue Ridge Parkway welcomes its 500 millionth visitor. And planting seeds. Green-thumbed readers rejoice to find a new column, Tar Heel Gardener, by L.A. Jackson. From the first entry on saving seeds from this year's harvest for next year's garden, Tar Heel Gardener is a hit and continues to run for 20 years. Jackson joins the growing chorus of beloved voices, including longtime contributor Billy Arthur, food columnist Edie Lowe, and quiz author Alan Hodge, then a reference assistant for the Charlotte Mecklenburg Public Library. Like the dozens of people he helps every day, we write, introducing Hodge in February 1991, we found him to be a walking fountain of information. In 1966, a new chapter. Several months after purchasing The State in April, publisher Bernie Mann makes a big announcement. For 63 years, this magazine has told wonderful stories about people and places that make up our state. We thought, therefore, that a more fitting and descriptive title for this magazine would be Our State. This small change may not mean much to longtime readers who often just call this State Magazine, but Our State is a much warmer and friendlier title that says without any confusion what this magazine is about. 1997 in living color. In the mid-90s, the black and white pages of the magazine burst into color, gradually devoting more real estate to the visual storytelling that becomes a hallmark of our state. An eight-page photographic essay on wildflowers provides an early blueprint for the lush 20-page photo essays eventually featured in every issue. Why the change? As then-editor Scott Smith puts it in October 1996, it's all about bringing our passion for North Carolina to the page. No longer is it going to be done largely through words, he writes. The pictures will provide an equal partner. In 2000, United We Stand. 2001, a veteran revisits USS North Carolina. The September 11 terrorists' attacks remind us of our patriotic debt to those who have fought for our freedom aboard ships like the USS North Carolina. We feature one man's connection with the warship. Charles Patey's eyes grow soft when he talks about the ship and how much it means to him. I love the old thing. It was a safe home, and it got me back from the war. And the battleship is pictured here in 2001. 2002, the road to equality. Charlotte attorney Julius Chambers is one of many North Carolinians who, since the 1960s, have devoted their lives to civil rights. We write that he attended mass rallies at churches and watched how these meetings incubated strength in leadership, enabling wronged people to assert their rights. Since then, Chambers has tirelessly argued civil rights cases in every county of the state. He has watched attitudes soften and people change. In 2005, Lives on the Line, we pay tribute to generations of North Carolina soldiers whose sacrifices have allowed all of us to live free and peacefully, leaving behind the farmlands of Stokes and Randolph counties, the fields of Four Oaks, civilian life in Raleigh and school in Chapel Hill and Lumberton. Tar Heel men and women quietly left their homes for the battlefield. They carry fragments of home and memories of friends and family. In 2008, Global Connections, we published stories on immigrants who became proud North Carolinians, including a once small Chinese boy dressed in an exact replica of the uniform of a United States Marine. Back in the late 1940s, neither the child nor the Marines who had befriended him could have predicted Charlie would someday stand as a newly minted American citizen under Carolina blue skies. In 2010, Celebrating North Carolina. 2011, that was the 2010s. In 2011, Carolina Kitchen Community Cookbook recipes appear in the Carolina Cooking section for the first time. Our state magazine wants your church's organization or family's cookbooks. Gail Cobble Gurley sent us her cookbook and stirred memories with her vintage family recipes. The cookbook series runs for 3 years and becomes beloved by readers. Then writers you know and love. Philip Girard's Civil War series debuts in 2011 and runs exact length of the real-life conflict. A few years later, Susan Stafford Kelly begins making regular contributions to our state with personal essays and feature stories. In 2015, we introduced Field Trips, Drew Perry's column about exploring the state with his sons, and Ramblin' Man, in which T. Edward Nickens waxes poetic in the Carolina countryside. Girard's Decade series kick off in 2018, delving into the history of the state from the 1940s into the 1980s. Welcome Home, City Portrait, in 2015 examines North Carolina communities. And in 2020s and beyond, as we look ahead, our state will continue to celebrate the landscape, towns, foods, and people of North Carolina. That's about all the time we have for this episode of our state magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of our state magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our state magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.